And Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group. Leah Cars for life. Find them on the web at leahcars.com. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America, day two, Friday. Our Clare Court location, if you were watching earlier, we had some horses behind us. It's always a lot of fun and really enjoying it. We kicked things off with a little preseason on Wednesday and then yesterday and today. And again, I mentioned on the handicapping show over on the front side, there was a lot of enthusiasm, obviously, yesterday, as there normally is on opening day. But I heard from a lot of folks who were happy we're back here with the morning programming on OTB TV. So again, we appreciate your tuning in. Spread the word. And if you're over there and you see me, certainly love to have you come over and say hello. This morning, another nice edition of Racing Across America. Coming up in a few minutes, Cherie DeVoe will join us. Trainer with some local roots, but she is doing very well on her own now and had a really nice weekend last weekend. I mentioned a few minutes ago, More Than Looks, her runner won the Manila at Belmont the other day, and looks like a really nice three-year-old turfer to watch. And she had some other nice runners over the weekend as well. So we'll hit on some of those, what the plans may be going into the summer for her runners. Towards the end of the show, we'll be joined by Rich Eng, used to be the horse racing writer for the Las Vegas, and I'm not sure, Journal Review or Review Journal. But we used to have him on the show quite a bit back in the day when we had the weekday show. I haven't talked to Rich in a while, but I saw he was coming to town because he has the second edition of Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies coming out, and he has a signing across the street tomorrow morning at the National Museum of Racing. So we'll have Rich on a little bit later. But annually, one of our early guests, because I like to get Will on to talk a little bit about what NYFA has in store for the summer and then talk generally the whole year as well. It is the executive director of the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, our friend Will Alampievich. Will, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Thank you.
Happy to have you on. And as I say, you also have been a guy like Rich, been associated with for years and years. You and I have known you back since the Portland Meadow days when you were the GM out there. And then you had a stint over at NYRA as well. Now the executive director at NYFA. For folks who aren't familiar, talk a little bit about how you got into the game.
Yeah, thanks. So I grew up in Toronto, a fan of racing, got a degree in economics and financial management, and didn't really want to do anything with it other than work at the racetrack. Pardon me, a mosquito is eating me alive. I started working at a small harness track, Flamborough Downs, and basically tried to learn as much as I could about the industry. I bought a couple horses along the way, made a lot of great friendships, and ended up here 20 plus years later. And I've been in New York about 10 years, and I love it here. And seeing you, honestly, is the highlight of my year for many reasons, but it means I'm in Saratoga and the greatest race meet is upon us.
Was your family involved in horse racing, or did you just on your own develop an interest?
Yeah, so I went to Woodbine, Mohawk, Greenwood, Fort Erie. Those are all the tracks, within a big radius of Toronto. My family took us occasionally, and I fell in love with it. I remember, sneaking the racing form to school and reading it, in between classes. And the puzzle of trying to select the winner is something I still do today. Like, I'm not a Sudoku person. I don't do the New York Times crossword. I like the racing form. That's
I have said to people many times over the years, I love the puzzle as well. I think it's an adult brain teaser. And the beauty of it is, if you get it right, you get paid as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talked about kind of developing your love up at Woodbine. And I will tell people, and I always do it because we have a nice relationship with Woodbine. Hop on the Thruway if you've never been up. Woodbine, fun track, great hospitality. But one visit up there, I also made it stop at Fort Erie, and Fort Erie's very nice as well. And again, just kind of up the Thruway, not a bad trip. But talk a little bit about it. Again, you're tied in now with NYTHA New York Racing, and for a while you were involved with NYRA. It's always great to be here at Saratoga, to walk around the crowd and see young, old, male, female. But I also think this place just has the special sauce that helps develop new fans.
Absolutely. There's no better place to introduce people to racing. Oklahoma side, the Whitney stand, NYRA's invested a lot. It's just, you know, from morning to night, all-encompassing over here. I still remember the first time I came in 2015. I came Travers weekend. I was living in Portland, decided to take a vacation. As soon as I got off the Thruway, like you said, and started heading west on Union Ave, and then I saw the racetrack, I just knew immediately this was a place I was going to try to have to be. And I'm very lucky that I get paid to be up here. And so I am paid to be up here as the executive director of the NYTHA. NYTHA is the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, so we represent the interests of all horse owners and trainers that compete on the NYRA circuit, so Aqueduct, Belmont, and Saratoga. And so what do we do by representing the interests of the horsemen? You know, we work with government, we work with NYRA, you know, purses, race dates, all types of items. And then we provide benevolence to the backstretch workers. And another core principle of our organization and as part of our mission is horse welfare and aftercare. So we started two aftercare nonprofits, Take Two, Take the Lead. And, you know, horsemen in New York contribute over $1.5 million annually to aftercare. On the horse welfare side, we funded a lot of studies with the Grayson Jockey Club Foundation. We've paid for some testing equipment. And most recently, we're fully invested in wearable technology. So we've done a few different test projects with including wearables during the live races. And now we're working with a company called Aereo Neo, putting devices on horses in the morning, testing heart rate, stride length, cool down period, all these different things. There's been a lot of advances in our industry, but there's still a lot more to be done. And horse welfare is definitely a core a component of our organization.
Yeah, and I had just read just recently about some of that wearable technology, which I think, you know, technology we talk about in the horse racing game. When we did the Wednesday show, we were kind of reminiscing, Anthony Mormino and I, the days of the broadsheet racing form and how things have changed now for the fan, where you don't have to wait for the advanced edition the day before. You can pull the PPs up many days before the races, and you can watch replays online, et cetera, et cetera. But as far as the horses and the horsemen, those advances have been made with the technology as well. And I think this wearable technology has a real future potential.
Yeah, I would say every month it's getting better and better. It's it mimics, you know, our everyday lives.
Yeah.
Like when we first started getting introduced to online shopping, it kept getting better and better. Electric cars, everything. This mimics that identically. And I would say within the next year or two, you're going to hear some really amazing announcements from the industry in New York. NYRA is a key partner of ours, and our horsemen have volunteered. So we've worked with a couple different companies, most recently Aereo Neo. We're providing the devices and the back-end software free of charge to them.
Nice.
And we've got about 25 devices in use on a daily basis. So if there's any horsemen currently watching this that isn't aware that we were doing this, please reach out to me, and we'll get you some of these devices as well. We are trying to expand the scope, and there's almost no limits other than the amount of people willing to participate.
Yeah, to me, the potential is great. And, you know, that issue, you know, the horse safety has become so prominent over the past, you know, 5 years, decade or so. And we'll hit on, you mentioned the retirement programs you have also. We'll hit on those a little more in a moment, but those have become such a forefront for fans and the horsemen and whatnot. That technology, I think, has a lot of potential. You also alluded to, and people come to the racetrack as fans, and we see the glitz and glamour of the paddock and the winner's circle and whatnot. But back here, you're dealing day in and day out with the horsemen, the trainers and the backstretch workers who are here, you know, 7 days a week, 365 a year, taking care of the horses. And I pulled up a shot just the other day, great new addition to Saratoga, the new clinic, the Backstretch Healthcare Clinic, had the grand opening the other day, part of the initiative to take care of the backstretch workers. Just talk a little bit about NYTHA, New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, and how important the backstretch workers are and how you're involved in that.
Yeah, thank you. The organization NYTHA funds BEST. BEST is the Backstretch Employee Services Team of New York. They run basically medical services, wellness at both Saratoga and Belmont. That's where the stable areas are. We don't have stabling anymore at Aqueduct. If we did, there would be a BEST facility there as well. And so we basically give free healthcare facilities to the backstretch workers. This new facility replaces a small little trailer, and it's wonderful. It was funded by John Hendrickson and Mary Lou Whitney. Their commitment to the backstretch is unparalleled. It's unbelievable. This wouldn't have happened without their generosity. I was at the ribbon cutting. I'm a co-chair of BEST as well. And BEST also does have other funding mechanisms. Sorry, I shouldn't have just said that NYTHA funds BEST, but it's one of our core benevolence funding. And it's just remarkable. I did a tour, and I live downstate most of the time, and I've been to a few healthcare facilities in Queens and Manhattan. I'm laughing, but I've not been to anything as nice as that. It's wonderful.
That's great.
Everyone deserves that level of care, especially our community of people that look after the horses. They should not get any less than that. And, you know, John Hendrickson and Mary Lou Whitney, they set the bar really high.
Before Mary Lou passed away, she used to host the movie nights over there as well with the backstretch workers.
There's this great calendar of events that if you're walking around the barn area, you'll see there's almost something to do every night as a result of the benevolence of John Hendrickson still to this day. Sunday, there's a free dinner, Oklahoma side, just outside BEST, right under the Mary Lou Whitney Pavilion, aptly named after her. And there's bingo on Wednesday nights. We also fund a recreation program. So Nick Harris, who you might see around the backstretch.
With the chaplaincy,
yep. He's responsible for our recreation program. You know, they take people to Six Flags, all sorts of sporting events, take them up to Lake George. It's more than just being stuck here, and we're responsible for that on behalf of all horsemen. So that's definitely something that we feel privileged to do.
Yeah, and you guys, as I say, you guys do great work on behalf of the backstretch people, who are such an important part of the game. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that because, as I say, folks over on the front side, I don't think totally realize how much goes into putting on the show every day. And the folks on the backstretch are obviously a huge, 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 huge part of that. You and I were talking when you sat down a few months ago. I was down in Albany for the rally, and you were having a rally on behalf of the redevelopment at Belmont Park. I went down and shot some video, showed it on the network a few days later, it, you know, things seemed to work out in the legislature, and we will have that redevelopment at Belmont. Talk a little bit about the horsemen and the feeling with that situation as things have seemed to move forward with the new Belmont Park.
Yeah, to all of our fans, thank you for your support. You know, over the past couple of years, we've done a letter-writing campaign to local legislators, a letter-writing campaign to the governor. Our organization has spent hundreds of hours lobbying with individual meetings with key legislators. The rally was the culmination of a few years' worth of efforts.
It was really a great event in the Capitol. It got well turned out. And, yeah. I mean, there was all people from the horse racing community, with fans and the organizations, trainers and whatnot.
Yeah. So I've spent quite a bit of time up in the Capitol, and I've gone on a few days, and other organizations try to have rallies. They wear matching shirts, hats. They scream loudly. And, you know, sometimes there's 10 or 20 people there. And it's beautiful to see. Its efficacy might not be amazing. There was 200 people there. And again, getting back to our community of people who work with the horses, they rode buses from Saratoga and from Belmont, took time off of work to support this initiative. So our elected officials and the general public watching on TV later, and thanks for covering it, could see what this meant to our industry. And
That whole main staircase. Breeders were showing up too, but that whole main staircase was full.
Yeah, so I think the beauty of it is it was organized by the We Are New York Horse Racing Coalition, of which we are one of the founding members. Naira and the Breeders, the New York Thoroughbred Breeders, and Naja Thompson's organization are founding members as well. And I think it just goes to show you when we work together, anything is possible. Yeah. Anything is possible. And that's why I have a lot of faith in our industry and a lot of faith in the New York industry going forward, not just because we're getting a new building, but when we work together, so much is possible. And, you know, you come to Saratoga, it's busy, it's packed, handles through the roof. And I think now with Belmont and a modernized building, my office is there. If you go in the fall, it's wretchedly cold. It's not an enjoyable experience. So this building will let all of us in the industry derive benefit from it. And I'm convinced that fans will come back to watch live. And for us as horsemen, that's the better dollars. Because when people are betting on track, the purse account grows the most. So selfishly, it's good for us.
Well, I think, and Naira's done a great job up here at Saratoga the last few years, upgrading the facility to a 21st century sporting facility, which fans expect. And so I think the Belmont facility has become a little bit antiquated from that perspective. So I think the new reimagined Belmont is going to help make it more of a 21st century facility, which is going to bring fans, and that's always very good for the game, certainly. Another thing I wanted to touch on that I'm sure brought a smile to everybody's face at night when they announced a couple weeks ago the purse enhancements up here at Saratoga, and you look at some of these purses now with that New York Red enhancement. Ooh, they're out of the ballpark there. But New York Red's facing open company. It's going to be a fun Saratoga.
Yeah, yeah. So we talked to Naira and the New York Thoroughbred Breeders. There's a general purse, and then there's a bonus program targeted towards owners and breeders, whether the horse is sired by a New York stallion or not. Naja Thompson's organization handles all of that. But offering a competitive product that gamblers want to watch and bet on benefits us all.
Yeah.
Because we generate the majority of our purse account from people betting our races. And so if Naira can put on a good field of 7, 8, 9, 10 horses, that means it's a better product and we all win because more money will be wagered on that race, Seth, and then the purse account will grow. So the idea was born to try to incentivize New York Breds to race in open company. And the proof was in the pudding yesterday. Unfortunately, we had a scratch, but there were 7 horses in the first race, and a New York Bred won it. There was 3 New York Breds in the race, and so that race wouldn't have gone if the New York Breds weren't in the race. So not only was it a competitive race prior to the scratch, and you know our customers bet it, and we generated benefit from it, but the other horse owners and trainers probably wouldn't have had an opportunity to race otherwise. And I have the chart right in front of me. Winning Move Stables, Bustin' Bay, trained by Linda Rice and ridden by Jose Ortiz, won the race. And the listed purse was $149,500 for an entry-level allowance race. And they got $82,225. It's just remarkable.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And we need to incentivize horsemen to race in specific spots for the betterment of the product. I'm a horse owner myself, and I'm going to choose the easiest spot possible with the lowest field size 10 times out of 10, unless there's something else there. And I think this is, this might not be the final solution, but we're testing it for Saratoga. See how it does. Solicit feedback from people. But on opening day, it worked well.
Yeah, very good. Will, got to let you go. We're running up against the clock, but we certainly appreciate the visit. And in the last couple of years, you've helped out doing a little guest coordinating with NYTHA folks, and that's allowed us to talk to some trainers, some NYTHA members, but also some owners that have been fun to have come sit in here, because I think they're people the fans may not be familiar with. So you're going to help us out on some Fridays going forward, and we certainly appreciate that. But appreciate the stop in. Wish you and everybody at NYTHA a good luck during the Saratoga meet. You mentioned your office down in Saratoga. You have one of the best offices in all of horse racing right out here in the back stretch.
Yeah, Cottage 31. Please visit us. And we have a gazebo on the front side close to Duncan as well. We love meeting our horse owners, our trainers, and fans. If anyone's interested in getting involved in horse ownership, we're a great first stop. We can help you get started and connect you to people. So yeah. Please say hi.
I sat in with Steve Bick on the radio the other day, and he had upgraded and was using your gazebo in the morning for that. But yeah, stop by. It's right by the Dunkin' Donuts setup. Will, appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Will Alampiewicz, the executive director of the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. All right, we'll head to a break when we come back. Cherie DeVoe, a little bit after that. Saw him out in the green room. Rich Eng, stay tuned. All of that right after this.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Find great racing content on the HHH Racing Podcast. Each week, host Howard Kravitz and regulars Paul Halloran and Pete Visco preview, review, and handicap some of the biggest races from across the country, plus regular visits from the sport's top trainers and handicappers. Find them on YouTube, live Wednesdays and Thursdays, and replays anytime. Learn more at hhhracingpodcast.com and check out the very successful weekly Power Picks at Patreon for the team's picks, plays, and handicapping info.
The Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTB.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Happy you joined us on this Friday morning. And as promised before the break, joined now by trainer Cherie DeVoe. Really great weekend last weekend. We'll talk about some of those performances and how they may play out the remainder of the summer and more. Cherie, good morning.
Good morning.
And when you sat down, I talked to you and I said, it was a couple of weeks ago, I was in doing the handicapping show from the studio in Albany, and we were watching a little Monticello there, which I think we just kind of lucked into, because I think a couple of thoroughbred tracks had canceled because of the crazy smoke situation.
Right, yeah.
So we had some Monticello on, and your brother Jim DeVoe got his 7,000th career win. And that's kind of your family background.
Right.
I mean, how much time, you know, as a kid, did you spend right across the street at the harness track?
A lot when I was younger. My parents took a sabbatical from the harness racing when I was about 9 or 10 years old, and we moved to Florida. And they went and got back into it. My brothers, they took a couple breaks from it, but they've been in it, and ever since I was in college, I've been in this. So a long time when I was younger, but it was fun and hard work for sure.
Yeah, couldn't have taken too much of a break to get 7,000.
Yeah.
How did you transition from that, the family on the harness side, how'd you transition over to thoroughbreds?
It's actually kind of a funny story. I was in college in Florida, and when my parents moved back up here, they got back into the harness racing, just very small scale compared to what they were. And I had to move because when they moved, they kicked me out of in-state residency, and I had some scholarships attached to that. So I came up here, and I just was looking for a summer job, and Phil Gleaves happened to be in the barn across from us. And that's how I started. I started hot walking for Phil, and I was going to school in Albany for pre-med, of all things, and went through my 4 years of school, and I just, by switching schools, one thing or another, I still had a year of classes to take, and I just, all I wanted to do was ride and gallop, and started working for Chuck Simon. So that's how I got into this, just by being a hot walker.
Yeah, nice. Start with Chuck. Very, very good. Another local product, Chuck Simon. Do you still get on horses in the morning?
Not anymore. I had a knee replacement 2 years ago, and before that, it's just too busy. My knee was so bad before I had it that I could barely walk. So I've just been getting back on the pony. It's set up after all this time, and so I've just been getting on the pony, and I really have a desire to get back on them because, you don't bounce. It's true. You don't bounce like you used to, and I'm okay with that.
Coincidentally, I was talking to Richard Migliori in the press box yesterday, and he said, yeah, the first thing on the jacket goes the legs.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we get into specifics, talk a little bit about your outfit and how you're situated, because you guys are based, you're married to David and Gordo, bloodstock agent, so I guess Kentucky's the place you want to be a lot of the year, and that's pretty much where you're based, but you'll be up here through the summer as well?
Right, so the majority of our stable is in Kentucky. We have 60 left there, and a little more because right now we get them ready at Keeneland or Churchill, and then we send them up here when they're ready to run, and then when Keeneland closes up, then we'll fill the barn up. But we try to let them stay at the track that they've been at since March or April, and then we integrate them up here, or they run at Ellis or somewhere in that area. So we just have a small stable here, which works for us, and we really try to handpick the horses that belong here. Some of them, will give them starts in the next couple weeks, and if they run really well and they deserve to come up here, then we'll bring them up here. But as far as the two-year-olds go, my first couple years, I really had them ready to run the first time, and then they just really couldn't fire back. So we've taken a different approach where we'll let them get a race, and then we can always bring them here. So, or, a bigger stage. So, we'll let them get their first races in, and if they show that they have a lot of ability and deserve to come up here, that's what we'll do.
Yeah, and I think as a handicapper, it seems like over the past, certainly the past two or three years, the summer two-year-old program at Ellis has become very active.
It is very active now with Churchill Downs Incorporated buying it. The purses are way up, and the competition is still very tough. On the dirt, you've definitely... It's not just an easy track to run at. It's easy in the sense that the track is a very nice track. The surface of it is nice. And now the purses are in good order. But, you come up here and you better have the best of the best. And there you can at least be competitive with the horse and not have to run their best race to show themselves. So, there's a lot of well-respected trainers and a lot of nice two-year-olds in the area, but it's just a step easier from a developmental standpoint to start them there than to move them up here with all the stuff going on. And it's obviously the environment's a lot quieter for them, so it just makes it a little bit easier for them mentally and physically to get started there.
That brings up that triggered a question, because as a handicapper, I think it was a great idea. I wonder, and again, you guys also get involved in sales and bloodstock and whatnot, so I'm curious from the horseman's perspective, do you think that the addition over the past couple of years in the condition book of the maiden races with the restriction to the auction price was a bonus? As a handicapper, I definitely do, particularly up here where it's so tough.
Right. And it gives you a chance to have a horse that's decent and run it to where it just might be not as good as the open company races. And then, you know, my husband's a bloodstock agent, as you said, and sometimes if you are lucky enough to buy a horse like that for yourself and it wins impressively and the numbers come back, it gives you an opportunity to sell the horse, and it shows what it is without having to run its best race.
Yeah, again, for people who aren't familiar over the last few years, you know, so tough up here. You're going against the million-dollar babies and whatnot, and over the past couple of years, they've added some conditions that it's restricted to a certain auction price and below, which I think has produced some competitive races and has allowed some horses to get a chance to show themselves up here. Speaking of show themselves, and I alluded to it when I brought you on, but I've mentioned it already a couple of times this morning, congratulations on a really nice weekend last weekend. And let's start with what I assume is the highlight. And I was shocked to hear this was your first graded stakes win at Belmont, because, of course, you were New York for a long time. But we're going to take a look at the stretch run here to the Manila. More Than Looks, Johnny Velasquez on board. Man, he's riding well. But More Than Looks, this was only the fifth career start. And it looks like you have a really fabulous three-year-old turfer. And I really love this subdivision of three-year-olds on the turf. I think there's a lot of opportunities all year long. Talk a little bit about this performance last weekend from More Than Looks, who, again, is the number three horse here. This is some stretch run.
Yeah, so More Than Looks was a horse that just took a while to come around, both physically and mentally. And you can tell he's still a little green. The first time we ran him, we sprinted him just to get a race into him. Then when he broke his maiden at Gulfstream on the Tapita, he's a come from behind horse, but he wants to break, and then he was getting too keen and climbing up on horses and expending energy. So he's one of those horses that just he keeps improving. At two, he just had some physical stuff that he needed to sort out, which have not had any problem now that we gave him the time. And he keeps improving mentally and maturing mentally. So when we ran him at Keeneland and he just missed on the wire, it's kind of, we came up with a plan. And sometimes with clients, it's easier to see the big picture if they know that there's steps that have to be taken. So not wanting to run him in a stakes race right off of that, because we didn't want him to go the wrong way with us. So, you know, I said, we'll run him back in allowance race. And then if he wins that, then we'll run in the Manila. And then we'll consider, you know, the Hall of Fame or even the Secretariat. So it actually, with Churchill, when they had the unfortunate events of having to move their races, there was a race that would have fit 4 weeks to the Manila and 4 weeks, or, you know, a couple.
Yeah.
The timing was right. And it got off a week. It pushed it a week. And so the conversation was, you know, if he runs well, what do we do? And the horse had to tell us that he should have been there, which, you know, it worked out perfectly.
So have you made a decision yet? Will we see him in the Hall of Fame up here? Or you're saying Secretariat may be possible as well?
Well, we've got the two races. I also have Northern Invader, who broke his maiden really impressively on the turf. So it's just one of those things where it's not my decision. I leave it up to the clients and the horses. So, you know, if one of them needs to take a week off, gets a temp, or, you know, just not doing the way we want them to be doing. So just gives it a different option.
And you kind of allude, I when I get trainers in, I'm always curious about this, and I think it's fun for viewers to kind of hear the nuts and the bolts of the game.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about it when you talked about More Than Looks. It's not just the talent level. A lot of it is also the mental aspect,
right?
And you have to bring them along at their pace to get that confidence to show the talent.
Right, and he is, if you get after him at all, or he'll have a tendency to melt down a little bit. So, you know, it's just been a give and take. And a lot of them, they'll get there on their own. It's not any training or, you know, we've tried to get him to come off the bridle. We did a few things with him in the morning works. But really, they just have to get there on their own. And he's took a big step forward because he actually ran past horses. His previous races, he got up to them, but he really didn't clear the horse in front of him. So it was, you know, like, we didn't really do much. He had an easy breeze going into that race, but it's just usually their natural progression.
Yeah, that's interesting too. As a handicapper, it's frustrating, the horses who kind of get have the momentum and get up and you think, hey, I got the win here. And then they get there and they just want to go with their buddy to the wire. But it does seem like a lot of them, if they're lightly raced, they eventually kind of break through and figure it out.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk also, again, you had a really nice few days going back to Horseshoe Indy. I pulled up the Clarksville. We're going to watch Love and Money get it done. Stretch run here. Love and Money is going to be the number one horse here for Lyell. Talk a little bit about the performance the other day and what might be ahead for Love and Money.
So this was actually quite surprising with how she ran, because she's one we've tried to do everything we could to get her to come off the pace or get her to settle down, and she's just really strong and just doesn't it to no avail. And she was just fighting with the riders. So we just tried to stay out of her way. And the Joe Ramos, when I met him, it's the first horse he's ever ridden for us. And I said, you know, she breaks a little slow and then she'll take you to the lead, which is what she does historically in all of her races. So when she broke and he just left her alone, she just found her way to the back of the pack. She took a little bobble
step. First
call,
she's at the back.
She's at the back, and I thought, well, this just wasn't her day. And she circled the field. She had a full head of steam, and I just wasn't sure if she would be able to do that when she took herself out of her normal running style. I'm kind of interested to see how she comes out of that.
Does that lead to new instructions next time? Maybe she is a come from behind horse. Who knows?
Maybe just might be on how she wants to go, because the one thing we have realized, you can't fight with her.
Yeah.
Because she just will run off. And that's the same in the morning. She'll do the same thing. So, we just have to see how she comes out of that. I don't really have any firm plan for her. We were just hoping that she would hit the board, get some black type, and we could move forward. But showing a different dimension, I really want to get her back breezing, because if we just have to pick our spots where we run her less but get more out of the races. So that'll be dependent on how she starts, when she comes back and she starts back breezing, how she's doing and what we do with her.
No, I'm going to be interested to see her next time.
Yeah.
And see how it all works out. Also, at Horseshoe Indy, the Indiana Derby, Verifying lived up to the favoritism. No surprise there. But Cagliostro, for you, I thought ran a decent little third. Cagliostro is going to be the number eight horse in here. Still relatively lightly raced. This was only the sixth career start. A win, a couple seconds in this third place finish. What were your thoughts after this race, and what might be next for Cagliostro?
So this was one of those frustrating races, because he had an opportunity to go on the outside, and he just got in a lot of trouble in a short amount of time coming up the stretch. And he's got a big stride, and once you get him going and you try to stop him, it's just not for him. So
And we could see there, it seemed like the jockey coming down the stretch was kind of trying to decide, and,
right, you know. And he went to the inside, and he's done really well if he's just out in the clear of horses and makes his run. So some of it's the horse and just the way the race unfolded. So you think you're going to punch through on the inside, and he just got intimidated. He hasn't done that. We haven't asked him to do that, or he hasn't done that. So, there's a couple of the smaller stakes. He's not ready for a Travers. He doesn't want to go that distance. And he's developing each race. He's now consistent up in the – he's run 90 buyers, and he was, up until this race, continuing to progress each race. So, there's the Smarty Jones and – like the West Virginia Derby or the Ellis Park Derby. So there's a couple options to where we could take him where he's not running against the top, and we just try to make the best use out of him until, one day he might take the step forward. He's another one that's maturing later on. He's not fully there. So, let's take our time with him. But there's a couple other spots for him that we can go without having to go way to the top.
Yeah, there's that next tier, which still offers big money for three-year-olds throughout the summer and early fall, and he may be one that actually, as a four-year-old kind of progresses as well.
And
then you have a great season with, a horse that has done well in the three-year-old season. Also, another one that ran well over the past weekend in the Victory Ride. This was a salty little field, and, Bill Parcells has Maple Leaf Mel, who is just turning out to be a little bit of a monster, but in the Victory Ride, Maple Leaf Mel will be the winner. But number three, Vava, nice little third in here. John Velasquez on board. Nice little three-year-old female sprinter. Talk about Vava last weekend and what might be next for Vava.
So, you know, on paper, it looked like the pace was going to develop a lot faster than what it was. And she's a, we've tried to stretch her out after she broke her maiden, and she had had two good races going into the winter time. And it's only natural that you try to give them a chance to do that for the horse, you know, for the clients. And she just really, she was third and fourth, and she was there, but she, it really, you could tell she just wasn't going to stretch out. So we regrouped, and at Keeneland we ran her. She ran a nice second. And so, you know, she, in that race, the pace didn't develop, and she, it's hard to close into that, especially against that group of horses. So, you know, she had a good gallop out. She was coming forward at the end of the race. So right now we have the test circled for her.
Oh, nice.
You know, it's a grade one. It's obviously going to be hard, and she'll have to bring her A game. But she's a beautiful filly who trains great. She trains really well. So, you know, even if you hit the board in something like that, that's a big accomplishment for her resume as far as, like, going
forward. And if you're aiming for that, is she here?
She's here, yes.
Ah, very good. And the test annually is one of my favorite races up here. I think you do well in the test. You have a nice runner. And speaking of potentially having nice runners, you alluded to this one earlier. It goes out for our friends at West Point Thoroughbreds, Northern Invader, a nice winner going back to July 1st. We'll look at the victory. Northern Invader is going to be the number four horse here. This was only career start number three, but a nice victory. And, you know, you mentioned this one is being one that you'll pick some spots with, and you have to be very happy with the victory the other day, again, in those West Point silks. Talk a little bit about Northern Invader.
So, and happy because we own part of the horse, too, David and I. So a little personal vested interest in there. But so him, he was one that I actually struggled with because he trained so well on the dirt. But the pedigree, collected his city zip. The dam is by Arch. She's a full to Arch. So when you know, you're looking at it and you're looking at the horse, he did look like he belonged on the turf. But he had trained really well on the dirt. And it's hard, you know,
dilemma.
You don't want to... Well, and it's... People get really excited about dirt horses. And when they run like that on the turf. So we put him on the dirt, and he ran great first time out. Actually ended up being on the slop. And he ran really well, and then he followed that up with a nice, good performance, but you could tell that's not his best. So we're actually, there wasn't an opportunity to run him here early in the meet, so we shipped him to Belmont to just try and see if he could handle the turf.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, mission accomplished. It couldn't have worked out any better. But he, you know, when you're comparing a horse like him to a horse like More Than Looks, he's had three solid races, and, you know, he galloped away from that, from the field. So he's just mentally probably, you know, a lot, he could handle going into something like a stakes race. His time was really fast as well. So, you know, it's not like him, from a development standpoint, you could probably throw a little bit more at him. And he's, you know, as far as training goes and mentally, he's always been a pro.
You mentioned you and your husband involved as well as the folks at West Point. What's the background on that one?
So David buys horses with West, buys them, advises them. He's their bloodstock agent. And, you know, sometimes he'll like a horse and they'll just come to an agreement that they'll buy part, and maybe some of my clients will take over. But David really liked him, so he just figured he'd go in for a portion ourselves.
Good thinking.
Yeah.
Very good thinking. So we'll look for Northern Invader moving forward. And speaking of West Point, as I made my way back here to the backstretch after the races yesterday, I was saved by Tommy Bellhouse from West Point Thoroughbreds. Drove by and said, "You want to ride back there?" And so I made it back just before the downpour. But I said I was having you on, and he said, "Ask about Sands of War." And I was on the headphones when you were on with Steve Bick a couple mornings ago talking about very nicely bred horse that we'll have to keep our eyes on, Sands of War. Talk a little bit about that one.
So she's the dam is a half to Justify, and she's a Warfront filly, and she's come along. She took a little time to get there, but she just broke from the gate a couple weeks ago and followed it up with a really solid breeze. So if she,
it looked like to me, like looking at Equibase yesterday, the workout Wednesday kind of ramped it up a little bit,
right? And if she's training well, we'll bring her up here right before. There's a maiden special at the end of the, I think it's on the 30th, that we'll point her towards. You know, and she's turf, so it's hard on the dirt how good they are, but she's acts like she has some talent, and she's certainly bred for it. She's a little mean, so everyone better watch out.
And before we let you go, anything coming up in the next few days up here?
We have one today in the eighth race, I believe. Time Factor is a 50,000 claimer. He's training really well. It's a tough race, but, you know, we put him on the turf, and he ran really well. It's just those opportunities, like a 6-furlong turf race, are hard to come by. So try to win one here early in the meet and, you know, hopefully get that done and over with.
And so you'll be back and forth throughout the summer?
Yeah, because the majority of our stable's in Kentucky, and a lot of these horses are running, and they come up here ready to run. And the horses in Kentucky are more in development, so there's a lot more oversight that we, you know, have to focus on. And here, it's not like one's better than the other. These are all running, and we're just trying to maintain or see how they're changing.
Well, we wish you a lot of luck all summer long at both venues and beyond, and certainly always like to root for the folks with the local roots,
yeah.
So we appreciate that as well, and again, congratulations. Talk about that. How special was it to get a graded win down at your first graded win down at, like I say, it's amazing.
That's not it. It was I've only won 2 graded stakes races with Gam's Mission, but I hadn't won a race at Belmont at all until Northern Vader won. That's why it was Northern Invader was my first Belmont winner, and then we followed it right up with More Than Look. So it was a really good week for us to get 2 and 1 being a stakes race.
Yeah, very good, very good. Sheree, appreciate it. And again, good luck this summer.
Thank you so much.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Rich Eng is in the house. We'll talk a little bit about the second edition of his book, the book signing tomorrow, and more. Stay tuned.
Why just watch the races when you can be in the middle of the action? For nearly 20 years, Bonaventure Stables' share-based ownership program has made thoroughbred ownership affordable for the everyday fan. Ownerships of 5 and 10% are now available on a nice selection of horses. As a partial owner with Bonaventure Stables, you'll enjoy all the benefits afforded every owner. Visit with your horse in the private stable area. Greet the trainers and jockeys in the paddock. And when your horse wins, savor the moment in the winner's circle at Saratoga, Belmont, Aqueduct, or wherever you bring home the prize. Based in historic Saratoga Springs, Bonaventure Stables has been training winners and creating memories since 2005. Learn more, see available horses, and meet our team at bonaventurestables.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, happy to be joined now by author Rich Eng. Rich and I were talking just as we came out of the commercial. I have known Rich for quite a while, and in fact, used to be a regular when we were doing the weekday morning show. But I haven't talked to Rich in a while, and it's the first time we've met face-to-face. Rich, good morning.
Welcome
to Saratoga.
Well, thank you. You know, I have not been back here for quite a while. I used to work here from 79 to 1985. I worked in the publicity department.
Yeah, you were a NYRA employee, and I was going to touch on that a little bit. Give folks your back. And I mentioned, and I never am sure of the proper name, you were a longtime horse racing writer for the Las Vegas Review Journal or Journal Review?
Review Journal.
Okay.
You had it correct.
A longtime racing writer there. But give people your background. How'd you get into the game, and how'd you wind up here at NYRA to kind of kick things off?
Yeah, real quick. I'm a St. John's graduate. Very, very proud of that.
Paulie.
Yeah, and back then we were called the Redmen. It was not the Red Storm. Yeah. And I went to there for sports administration, did an internship at Aqueduct. I got hired the same week of Spectacular Bid running for the Triple Crown.
Oh.
That was my...
The Ronnie Franklin,
Yeah, that was my start. In fact, Ronnie Franklin had a very famous fight with Angel Cordero in the jocks room that week, but I digress. But I was at NYRA for 6 years, and I've worked in publicity for a good 20-plus years. I was a PR director at Santa Anita for a while and Turfway Park. But for 20 years, I was the horse racing writer and handicapper for the Las Vegas Review Journal. So I've been in Vegas for about 25 years now. And I wrote... That led me to writing the two Dummies books. The first one was written in 2004, and that was that came out after the germination of that was after Smarty Jones had that very famous run for the Triple Crown, but it really spiked horse racing interest with Smarty. So the Dummies people said, let's write a book, and they selected me to write that book. And then 19 years later, I wrote the second edition that just came out. And the beauty of this, Seth, is the fact that there would not be a second edition if we didn't sell enough copies of the first edition. So that's why this is second
edition. I know there was, and then you tweeted something out, and a lot of people were reiterating that, but I know the first edition had a lot of buzz to it. It was a great idea. And I'm happy we're able to talk a little bit about it here, because I always say, and I said, I had Will Alampievich on earlier from NYTHA, and I said, this place just has the special sauce where we bring new people into the game. So those are the kind of people that will benefit from the book, certainly, because there is a little bit of, when you're new to the game, you look at the PPs and it's all Greek to me. And so I think everybody needs either a friend to come sit next to them at the track or to have a little bit of a primer like that.
That is correct. It's intimidating to dive into horse racing the first time, but a book like this, and it's the whole Dummy series, they take a subject, and they when I was writing, they told me you have to write with zero base knowledge of the reader, meaning that you would pick up a book if you know nothing about horse racing, and this can take you step by step to at least educate you to a certain point. And so you know, I explain a lot of things from A to Z, front side and back side, and you know, I knock on wood, I feel like I've started a lot of people, newcomers, to love horse racing like we do.
And talk about the feedback you got after you put out the first edition of the book.
Oh, it was fantastic. You know, I did book signings at all three California tracks and some other places like Santa Anita, Hollywood Park, and Del Mar. And I went to Kentucky Derby that spring, and John Asher, the late John Asher, put me on Derby on the radio row. I did every radio show, every TV show, and I handed out the books to the media people. They had so much fun with it, because can you imagine some of those morning guys saying, hey, look at this, this is perfect for me, I'm a Dummy, you know, that kind of thing. And so it really worked out great. It's got a lot of people started, and I put my email in the book because I want people to actually communicate with me, and hundreds of them did. You know, it's dropped off over the years, but I loved getting the feedback from the new people, and I was more than willing to share knowledge with them.
And there is the book right there. But for folks who may be watching, well, I was going to say locally, but watching us on YouTube or whatnot, because I'll give you a way, if you're local, how you can get it and get a signed copy in a moment. But for folks who maybe are going to order online or whatnot, where can they find the book?
Well, the main source is probably Amazon.com. And if you click on it, there's actually a nice homepage for it. And I actually got some nice recommendations from Larry Colmus, Steve Bick, Rich Perloff, my friend Ralph Sirocco out in Vegas. So they wrote testimonials for the book. And, you know, they've all seen it. They saw the first edition, saw the second edition. So I'm very happy to have people like that to recommend it.
And again, so if you're out you know, outside our viewing area, you can do that. But if you're in our viewing area, and that's why Rich is in town, and that's why I saw on Twitter, and so I said, I got to pull Rich
Thank
over
you.
Here, and we'll promo a little bit tomorrow morning right across the street. If people are coming to the racetrack, alert them to get the early start and go over to the National Museum of Racing tomorrow.
Yeah, my appearance will start at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning at the National Museum of Racing here in Saratoga. And I'll be doing a handicapping seminar as well as a book signing. And I'll be talking about the book, Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, second edition. It's available for purchase there. It's $25, and the autograph and the inscription is free from me. And also I invite people, if they have the first edition, and for whatever reason you don't want to buy the second edition, still come out. I'd be more than happy to sign the first edition.
Yeah, again, if folks aren't absolutely familiar, the National Museum of Racing is literally across the street from the racetrack. So if you're thinking, yeah, maybe I'll go up to the races tomorrow, come a little bit early, get the 10 a.m. start. You're right across the street. It wraps up. You can just pop across the street
yep.
and spend the afternoon at the races. And that's going to be your game plan for the next couple of days as well. You looking forward to it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I obviously used to be at the racetrack all the time the first two decades of my career. And, you know, it was so much fun being at the track every day. You know, the thought, Seth, that they pay people like us to be at the racetrack is just...
I say to people, dirty job that somebody has to do.
It's just phenomenal. And, you know, being in Vegas, I must admit, a little more isolated. But the horse racing interest in Vegas is strong because all the race books and the casinos have race books. So, but I don't get to the track as often. So this is such a joy for me to come back. I haven't been back probably in the 15, 20 years. And I want to look around and see all the new renovations.
Yeah, I'm happy you're here. I get to meet you in person finally. But talk a little bit about Vegas horse racing. Do you still put out picks?
Yes, I do. You know, after I left the Review Journal, I retired from there in 2016. I had so many readers, because they could download the picks for free off the internet, they said, well, you know, where are you going to be? And so I started a sheet. And people can subscribe to it, and I will email it out every night. So, you know, I've got a nice subscription base. And I handicap Southern California. Plus, because of my background from Turfway, I do Keeneland and Kentucky Downs because, you know, I have intimate knowledge of those two tracks, and they're very high interest.
Is that the, if they go to what, the Race Day Las Vegas website?
RaceDayLasVegas.com. I've got a home page. In fact, if you look, if you go to that website, RaceDayLasVegas.com, you'll see my picture in the left column. Just click on my face and you'll get to my homepage.
Very good.
Shows you how to order it.
And we'll get a couple of ideas for this afternoon as well, because we'll let Rich do a little handicapping. Why not? He's the guy who wrote the books. But again, I'll tout that signing tomorrow. And again, looking forward to a nice turnout over there at the Racing Museum. It couldn't be any more conveniently located. But what I was about to get to when I talked about Vegas, are you a contest player? I know, I'm pretty sure it was just this past NHC you were sitting in with Bick quite a bit. He does a great job out there. We were lucky enough, we went out with OTB TV 3 and 4 years ago, I think. We were out covering the NHC, which I'm trying to make it as a player now because it's like the horse players convention. It is so much fun. And do you jump in some of the contests out there?
I used to love playing tournaments. In fact, one of the reasons they selected me, the dummies people selected me to write this book, was because in 2003 I won a tournament. It was called the championship at the Orleans. It was in April of 2003, and it was a $100,000 tournament.
Nice.
And I won that. And that was on my resume when they were researching for a handicapper, saying, well, this guy, I guess he knows what he's doing. So, you know, but I don't play as much anymore. It's very time consuming. And also I do some work with the Daily Racing Form, which is a sponsor, which basically prohibits me from participating as a Racing Form employee.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, and I'll get your opinion on this as well. They have the low rollers over here on Thursdays and Sundays throughout the meet, and I say to people, that's a great way to jump in. $40, $10 goes to the prize pool. You get a card for $30. You do five $2 win place and show bets throughout
Excellent.
The day. Then you keep the money that's on the card, and if you place in the contest, you get extra money. But it's a great way to get started on contests. At OTB, we have the tourney bets link, and we have contests that folks can find every weekend there as well. But I tell people, because I say, if you're a handicapping contest player, I think you look at it a little bit differently. You're searching for some value, and I think it helps your handicapping ultimately.
I think it does, too. I do have a chapter on tournaments here in Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, and it's based upon my knowledge, personal knowledge of being in tournaments, but also a good friend of mine is a fellow named Kenny Jordan, who's also a very, very good tournament player. So we discuss strategies and, you know, certain things you do. You know, live money is a lot different than mythical money. Mythical money was the kind of tournament that I won at the Orleans. Basically, the scoring was $20 win place, yeah. Mythical money. But live money is a lot different. Seth, you probably had a chance to play some live money. But a lot of people basically preserve their bankroll, wait till the last race or last races, and then go all in like chips in a poker game.
All of the formats have their pros and cons, but the live money, that's the kicker to me. I was in the big tournament up here, which is one of the nice tournaments. This is going back 8 or 9 years. And I had a great early portion of the day. And at the end of the day, I was sitting 6th, 7th, 8th with the last couple of races. I'm a regular guy. So I have a couple of thousand bucks there. And so I'm not pushing all in because that's already a pretty good day for me. But I go from in the last couple of races, whatever it was, 6th or 7th, and I wound up about 14th because some guys do just push all in. Mm-hmm. And they zoom up.
Well, you make a valid point that, you know, say if you have $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 left in the bankroll, not everybody can afford to go from $4,000 to zero, and you know, because it's real money. So I readily understand.
I already felt like I'm having a pretty good day, so I couldn't. I made a couple of substantial bets, but I just wasn't pushing all in. All right, let's get some thoughts for this afternoon. And again, they're off the turf here today. Second race, I think we're all looking at the Pletcher Rapoli runner, who to me, they paid just under $1 million. Kind of probably should have a win already. Unlucky not to, but just seems to tower over this field. So again, particularly if people are playing the, you know, the pick four or whatnot, maybe you get a free square.
Yeah, because, you know, part of my betting philosophy, and also I cover it in the book, is the fact when I play pick sixes or pick fives, I like to find one single. Because it does multiple things. One, it lowers the cost of the overall ticket. And also, two, it allows you to go wider as a spread in the other four legs or the other five legs. So I try to find a single. And so, to me, three Dreamlike in the second would be a single. So if I'm playing the early pick five, that gives me a chance to take a look at the other four races, maybe throw an extra couple of horses on.
And people might think it sucks some value out of it, but our colleague Brian Addo is a pick five guy, and he says, you know, if you get a price or two in the pick five, even with a horse like this, you can wind up having a nice little play. You have a favorite wager?
You know what? I'm pretty boring in that way, in the sense that I still bet a lot of straight bets, win place usually, and I bet a lot of doubles and exactas. Now, boring in the fact that, you know, I'm not going to make a score as far as, you know, hitting $500 exacta or $500 double, but, you know, you can always bet it more than once.
Yeah.
And it keeps you out of losing streaks when you focus on those kind of wagers. You're not going to, like, go 2 weeks without cashing a ticket. You should be able to cash tickets pretty regularly. So it's a little bit of a grind, but, you know, I don't mind grinding. And then when I find the situation that presents itself, I will go pick five, pick six. I don't bet pick sixes a whole lot, but pick fives for sure.
Yeah, I like pick fours quite a bit, but I'm more of an exacta guy over the years. But I will say, over the past maybe year, year and a half, doubles have attracted my attention. If you look around and you have kind of a clever opinion, you will wind up doubles can be okay.
Well, you know, one of the beauties of a daily double is the fact that if you just pay attention, whether you're at the racetrack looking up at the board or at home with an ADW, you can see the probables. And the probables are basically a path to you telling you where the money is going. It can be very helpful to look at probables, and that's available in doubles.
Yeah, I will tell people on Twitter, follow Marshall Graham. He kind of parses out that kind of thing, particularly the day-to-day doubles on big days like Oaks Day and Derby Day, that he'll look at the doubles and then parse out how this is how it's going to play the next day maybe. All right, 8th race today, Plain Vanilla, 50 claimers going 3/4 of a mile. I like Jake Roczen here. I thought it was a really competitive race. Dots Dollar is clearly the horse to beat, but Nifty is interesting. C's get degrees. What did you see in the 8th?
Yeah, this was a race that I kind of landed on the 3 C's got degrees. There's two angles that I really like as far as favorite type of horses. One would be kind of like a horse that has a good stalking type of style. You know, maybe likes to sit second, third, fourth, and really kick it in late. Yeah. You know, those kind of horses tend to stay out of trouble because there's not as many horses in front of them as there are behind them. And then the other angle, certainly, is, I always look for a lone speed. Lone speed is one of the best bets in horse racing because if you're in front, you basically try to stay in front. So a horse like the three, C's Got Degrees, to me is an interesting speed horse. This horse should be able to clear. And the way I write about it and talk about it is I know he's going to be in front. It's just a matter of how far, and hopefully he goes all the way.
Yeah, very good. And finally, we were talking before we went on, and you had some thoughts in the ninth, the Coronation Cup, but it's going to depend, obviously, who stays in and who comes out because, again, they're off the turf today. But your thoughts in the Coronation Cup, again, pending scratches.
Yeah, well, you know, with grass on, you know, on the turf, I really like the 8, Maserati, to try to upset the big favorite, the 4, Love Reigns. If this horse does not scratch, I probably will still play him because if you take a look at the racing form or the Bruisnet PPs, this horse does have a lot of turf experience. I'm a big fan of Brittany Russell. Boy,
yeah,
boy, is she good.
Oh, yeah, nuts.
She is so good. And, again, the angle, this horse is going to be in front. It's just a matter of how long, and hopefully he can get to the wire. 8-1 in the morning line, but after scratches, who knows?
We'll say. Yeah, Brittany Russell, it was a couple of years ago when she really announced herself down in the Mid-Atlantic. She was a coin flip for a while. It's great. I mean, she's sitting at like 50%. It's nuts. And she's gone down and come back to almost reality, but it's still
like 30%, 25%.
Still a big number. Rich, again, we will tout Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, second edition. You have the signing tomorrow at the National Museum of Racing. You said that little handicapping seminar on Saturday.
Yeah, we'll take a look at a few races from the Saturday Saratoga card and there'll be a Q&A. I'd be happy to stick around and answer any questions that the audience has.
So keep that in mind. 10 o'clock, or 9 to 11, actually, tomorrow at the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. Again, right on Union Avenue across from the racetrack. Highly touted to stop by and check out Rich and pick up a copy of Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. Rich, it's been great to meet you in person. We have talked on the phone many times, but it's great to have you in town. You and wife's in town as well?
I got my sister and my brother.
Oh, okay.
And they love horses as much as I do, so we're going to be betting our brains out
there. So you and the family enjoy the next couple of days up here at Saratoga. Good luck. Cash them tickets.
Thank you, Seth. Happy to be here.
Rich Eng, again, stop by the event tomorrow across the street. All right, we'll wrap it up for this Friday edition of Racing Across America. As always, it's been fun. Tomorrow morning, we're back in. Saturday, the first Saturday of the meet, really nice stakes card. Tomorrow, we'll cover it all on the Handicappers Report at 9 a.m., Racing Across America at 10 a.m. Wrapping it up for this morning, Seth Merrill, live from Saratoga. Thanks for tuning in. See you tomorrow morning at 9 for the Handicappers Report.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Sometimes it pays to go with the flow, to check your worries at the door, to reconnect with your crew, to follow the thrills and the flavor, to roll with it and see where it takes you, to enjoy every minute to its fullest, and to dance like there's no tomorrow. You can do that here at Rivers Casino and Resort Schenectady, where the good times flow.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB, become a better horse player.
You've been watching Racing Across America. Racing Across America has been brought to you by... Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group, Leah Cars for life. Find them on the web at leahcars.com. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.